All right, let's get right to it. On our VIP line, my friend, my fellow leadership program of the Rockies graduate, Paul Lundeen, who prior to being state senator in Senate District 9 was in the Colorado State House of Representatives, was also a member of and chairman of the State Board of Education. Paul has done a lot of stuff, and he is an unflagging champion of liberty. Thank you for being here this morning, Paul.
Oh, my pleasure, Ross. It's good to be with you. Another unflagging champion of liberty.
We do what we can. It doesn't feel like we're winning that much, but we're trying.
Well, I tell you.
So before we get into, I wanted you here today to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of this legislative session. And most of it, I think, falls into the bad and the ugly categories, especially on the larger pieces of legislation. But I thought I might at least attempt to start with the good. You sent out a tweet yesterday about Senate Bill 185. You actually tagged Rhonda Fields in this. Can you just tell us what this one is and why we should be happy about it?
Absolutely, and I appreciate the opportunity to start with some good, because there were glimmers. There are glimpses of good that came out of the session. Mostly things were running in the wrong direction. But 185 is the fifth run. I've been now 5 years in the General Assembly, 4 years in the House, 1 year in the Senate, and every year I've been down there, I've run a bill that either improves our policy, provides services for, or gives law enforcement a tool to get at this scourge of human trafficking. Most people think human trafficking, India, Thailand, wherever. It's in Colorado. And the reality is this begins to change the culture. When we begin to understand that the children who are forced into human trafficking are in fact victims and not criminals, as our current law prior to this bill says they are, then we can change the culture and get them relief and get them rescue more quickly. So that's the big piece of what this bill 185 does. It provides an affirmative defense. It begins to tilt the scale to help change the culture both in law enforcement and on the street, so that children who are captured into human trafficking know we see them as victims and not criminals.
Do you have a sense, and if so, where do you get it from, as to the magnitude of this problem in Colorado? Like you say, people think about this in other countries. Clearly, you've been serious about this for a while, which means you have reason to believe that it's not just a problem, but a serious problem. How serious is it, and how do you know, since this can't be very easy stuff to collect data on?
That is the biggest problem, is it's so hard to collect data on this. But we know from the Innocence Lost Task Force in Denver, we know from many different aspects, we get glimpses into what's going on. And the reality is, this human trafficking piece, it's in the suburbs of our communities. It's not something that just happens in the darkest elements of our urban environment. It happens everywhere, and we know it because it is the number one fastest growing criminal enterprise. And think of it this way. If you, in fact, are a criminal entity that wants to sell drugs, you have to continuously replenish your inventory in order to sell more drugs. But the reality is, in human trafficking, the inventory remains more stable. It's easier to control, manipulate, groom, and bring new inventory in. It's just tragic that we even would think of children as inventory, but that's the way criminal enterprises see them.
And just to put a final point on this, when you talk about human trafficking, especially in the context of this bill, what you are talking about is forced child prostitution, right?
Absolutely. The bill also gets at forced labor trafficking, which is another problem we need to get a handle on. Anytime we are pushing another human being or allowing another human being to be pushed into what could be described as a form of modern slavery, we need to put our foot on the throat of that and stop it as quickly as we possibly can.
Okay, so let's talk about some other aspects of what happened in this legislative session. I would imagine there's a lot less good to talk about, especially on the larger pieces of legislation. I mean, the Democrats spent a lot of time saying, oh, bipartisan this and bipartisan that. But as far as I could tell, they were only bipartisan on the small stuff, not on the big stuff.
Well, we were bipartisan on that, which we were just talking about. But boy, there was a ton of agenda stuff going on that was not good for liberty and freedom in Colorado. As you pointed out, I've been observing for 4 years on the State Board of Education, 4 years in the House, and now a year in the Senate. I've been observing this for 9 years, and this session was by far the biggest acceleration and redistribution of power, your power over your ability to live your life the way you see fit, and to hand it over to the inescapable authority of government. It's just remarkable. Things like the national popular vote. Ross, I know you appreciate your vote. Your vote is precious to you, but we're going to take a part of that and ship it to California. We're going to take another part of that and ship it to New York, because we're the government. We're here to tell you how that's how it should be. The red flag bill is another bill that does the same thing, an agenda bill that says, you know what, in America, you are innocent until proven guilty, except in the case of the red flag law, we're going to, like in that movie, The Minority Report, we're going to look ahead into what the future might be. We're going to look into your eyes, and we're going to tell you you're guilty until you can climb an escalating wall of evidence to prove your innocence or prove your sanity. Those are just a couple glimpses into where things went wrong. And then there are bills.
Well, okay, just pause for a second. Pause for a second.
I know.
You could just pull the string and let Lundeen go, right? But so first of all, so you named the two bills that bothered me the most, and you will probably understand this more than most people. I know many of my listeners absolutely jumping up and down furious about the red flag bill, and I was against it too. But I got to tell you, Paul, I have never been more upset about a piece of legislation being passed into law than about national popular vote. I think it is disgusting, un-American. I think it is a short-sighted, cynical thinking by Democrats who seem to believe that they will win the national popular vote forever, even though all it'll just do is, you know, make Republicans, if this comes into force, it'll make Republicans campaign in California and New York where they don't otherwise, and a Republican could just as easily win. Can you imagine, Paul, being the Democrat who has to explain to Colorado Democrats why a Dem won Colorado and the Republican got the electoral votes, which is more likely than the other way around in this state right now.
Indeed. It's an impossibility. And I approach it in two ways. One is very philosophical. One is about America and some of the rich traditions and rich principles of our country, one of which is the idea of federalism. The founders realized this is a disparate group of people, even when it was only 13 colonies, a disparate group of people with different ideals. Philadelphia is different than Richmond. We need to have some way of allowing the local energy, the local ethos of a community, of a state, as we've now become 50 states, to be honored and respected in our process of our national elections, at the same time find a way to come together. And federalism is the way they did that. And the Electoral College is an acknowledgement of federalism. Well, this bill does incredible violence to that. It simply says, you know what, we don't care about Dallas and Omaha. We don't care about anything except where we can find the largest number of votes. And this is where I make my second argument. It's similar to what you were talking about. The current brass knuckles reality of electoral politics are about where can I harvest the most votes with the most efficiency and therefore potentially control the outcome of an election.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to harvest votes in the L.A. basin and in the New York metropolitan area than it is to harvest votes in Nebraska or Oklahoma or Utah or Colorado. And so the reality is the idea of creating this national popular vote pushes the ability to have a more predictable outcome. And I will tell you, the Democrats at this point in the electoral process are more sophisticated about harvesting votes than is my party. Now, the bad news for them is we will catch up at some point. We will attain, I hope, parity in the ability to be sophisticated in the election day politics and the election efforts to collect and harvest votes. But for now, the Democrats think they have the upper hand, and therefore they want to push it to this method of potentially having control over those national elections by virtue of the national popular vote. But the reality is exactly as you've said. It puts anybody in Colorado in the place of saying, yeah, we shipped your vote off to California. Sorry, here in Colorado, The Democrat actually won, or the Republican actually won, but the flip side happened in the more populous states, and therefore your vote actually didn't count.
That's right.
Bad idea.
Right. And I don't want to get too far off into the weeds on this at this point, but it raises the possibility of some very significant impacts if you were to ever get a very credible third-party candidate. You could really end up with some bad effects in the United States of America.
Sure,
so let's
sure.
get back to what I am in my mind now thinking of as the because we can legislative session. That we just went through, right? Democrats did everything because they could. One bill that didn't get a lot of attention, but I think deserves more, and I want to get your take on it, was this House Bill 1261, their climate stuff, reducing greenhouse gas emissions by at least 26% versus 2005 levels just 6 years from now, and 50% just 5 years after that, and 90% eventually?
Yep, in 2050. Absolutely. And the because we can framing you just gave it is perfect. People describe this last election as a 3D election. You know, Democrats have control of the governor's office. Democrats have control of the Senate. Democrats have control of the House. 3D. But what they're missing, and you can't miss it, and here's where the agenda comes from in large part, it's a 3B election as well. A Democrat from Boulder was elected to the governor's office. A Democrat from Boulder is now the Speaker of the House. And a Democrat from Boulder is the majority leader in the Senate.
Yep.
And the agenda associated with the extreme reaches of the Democrat Party, including we are miraculously going to solve global climate change by virtue of what we do here in Colorado, which is essentially what 1261 says, becomes something that is part of that agenda, becomes something that is being driven because they can. Well, the reality is 1261 sets these guidelines, sets these requirements, essentially. They're more than guidelines. They are actually requirements that would have us reduce emissions by 90% by 2050 here in Colorado, as if that would somehow change the broader forces at play, forestall the realities of physics, forestall the realities of the way that meteorological, I mean, we're talking big global effects like the Coriolis effect. It would somehow, a policy that we're pushing through here in Colorado would make all those changes. It's just impossible. And who does it burden? It's on the backs of the ratepayers. Anybody who flips a light switch on in their home and expects the lights to come on is going to be burdened by this effort. Now, quite frankly, if we could all agree, yes, this will, this is the more controversial thing I said from the well, I'm not convinced that anthropogenic global climate change is what's happening. It could be just a broader cycle, but let's just, even if I stipulated to that and say, yep, it's man-caused, can we change that by virtue of what we do in Colorado? The answer to me is obviously no. But it's an agenda item. It's an article of faith. It's an article of orthodoxy of the left agenda, and they're driving it through, and it came through. 261
yes.
came through the legislature.
Yeah, because they can. Let's see if we can get a couple more things in. For those of you just joining, my special guest, State Senator Paul Lundeen, Senate District 9, which comprises what, Senate District 9?
We're the northwest corner of El Paso County, and we're the northwest corner of Colorado Springs. I've got the Black Forest and some reaches that go out into the plains of El Paso County as well. But the good people of El Paso County, quite frankly, I look at myself as someone who's elected from that district, but I fight on behalf of all the people of Colorado.
We got about 3 minutes. Let's see if we can get through a couple other things. I didn't completely hate all-day kindergarten, as far as if you were to rank the agenda items from the left. What's your take on it now that it's real?
Well, I'm glad you didn't hate it, because at the end of the day, I fought to turn it from a mandate, which there were early discussions, we're going to mandate it. It had to be done, into something that's optional, can become a conversation between an individual and their local school district, which is the way I think it should be. Parents should be able to interact with their local school district.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, I was a yes vote, because I think that we have a clear understanding that early childhood education, and I don't want to push into pre-K.
Right.
I think that is time that should be spent with parents and their children. I don't think we want to pull people that is students into the K-12 environment prematurely. But when we do pull them in, I think, in fact, providing for a full-day kindergarten funding makes sense. Now, it's called free full-day K, which is a lie. Nothing is free.
Right.
Obviously, it's costing the taxpayers of Colorado another $173 million, so it's got a huge price tag on it. But as a matter of policy, I think it is more beneficial than not, and therefore I was a yes vote on that.
Okay, let's see if you can give me 1 minute on House Bill 1032, the sex ed bill that a lot of my listeners were extremely incensed about. I understand it was substantially rewritten before it passed.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a huge bill. It was almost a 30-page bill. It got cut down to about a 12-page bill. I still voted against it, still oppose it, do not think it's the right way to approach. However, it had no escape hatches. It had no abilities for districts to say, yeah, we don't want to do that, or for parents to reliably opt out the way it was written. As amended, it has, it's very clear that a district may choose not to have any sex ed, and if they choose not to provide human sexuality education, then they are not required to follow this expanded rubric of what that description looks like. So you can opt out completely at the district level, and it also, in the first version, did not allow charter schools any pathway out. In the final version, they may seek a waiver to the State Board of Education and develop whatever program they think the correct program would be for their environment. So there are elements in the bill that provide greater opportunities for the local community to have interaction with their local school board or with their charter school board and pick a different pathway. Those elements did not exist in the first version. They exist in this later version. However, the fact that in my mind it shuts down any federal dollars flowing in for abstinence education, I think that's a mistake. The fact that it creates a moral equivalency between adoption and abortion, I think that's a mistake. So I was a no vote on the bill as it was finally passed through. Excuse me, but better than what it was. It was just an incredibly heavy hand of government putting a statewide curriculum in place as originally drafted. That is no longer the case.
Well, thank you for fighting the fight each and every day. My friend and fellow leadership program of the Rockies grad, Paul Lundeen, thanks for being here as always, and we'll talk with you again soon. Time to take
my
a deep breath.
Russ. Take care, man.
Okay, you too. We'll be right back with a fantastic new book,